Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello and welcome to Indie Streak. My name is Rachel Galvin, and as you know, I interview film industry professionals on this show. If you've missed any of the shows, you can go back and listen to the archives. Well, today I'm interviewing Stephen Leibowitz, best known for being a film critic with The Examiner, but he's also been involved in film himself, and he is live at the Miami International Film Festival, so I think I have him on the line. Let's check here. Stephen, are you there?
I am here.
Great. Well, you're there at the Miami International Film Festival, and I know you just interviewed James Cromwell yesterday. How was that?
Great interview. Very gracious man. He was we've seen everyone knows him, maybe by name all the time, but you know, he's known for Babe because he was a farmer in that. You've seen him in so many movies, so people, you know, he's a well-known actor, of course, and he was very gracious. He's actually a co-star in so many movies, but playing at the Miami Film Festival, Still Mind, he's actually the leading actor in the movie.
What's the name of the movie?
Still Mind.
Okay. So that's playing there throughout the weekend, and you're interviewing other people throughout the weekend as well, right?
Yes. Early this morning, I interviewed Lance Hamstrom, who most recently directed Safe Haven, the Nicholas Sparks book, into a movie, which came out this past Valentine's Day. He has a movie here playing at the Miami Film Festival called The Hypnotist, which is made back in his homeland of Sweden. So it's a Swedish film. That's where he's originally from. So it's a foreign language film. He got, went back to his roots and made that there. I also interviewed John Leguizamo, the comedian, and that was a really great interview. We had a great time talking this morning.
Now, is he in that movie?
Oh, no, John Leguizamo is in a different movie. He's in a movie called The Trip 2, which is actually a Spanish language film. He actually told me that he took a whole year off because he speaks Spanish, he doesn't know the dialect perfectly. So he took some grammar lessons, some dialect lessons, just so he can really, because he's also a leading man in that movie, which he doesn't usually play. And he had to really learn his dialect. He took a year off to do that. That's called The Trip 2. That's playing here at the Miami Film Festival on Monday night.
Okay. Are there other people that you have lined up to interview?
I was supposed to talk to Viggo Mortensen, who's in a movie, a Spanish speaker. Viggo Mortensen, who's best known for playing in the Lord of the Rings movies, the original trilogy,
mm-hmm.
playing Aragorn. He's in a movie that's in Spanish called Everybody Has a Plan, because he actually speaks perfect Spanish. So he is in this movie. I'm supposed to do a phone interview with him, as we're doing right now. So that hasn't happened yet, so I'm still supposed to talk to him.
For those that haven't been down to the Miami Film Festival, talk a little bit about it. What do they have there?
Well, this is actually the 30th edition of the Miami International Film Festival. So they actually have a lot of movies lined up. Besides, they already had their opening night film this past Friday night. They still have which is called 20 Feet from Stardom, which is a documentary about backup singers finally getting to do in the music industry. That includes Bruce Springsteen, Mick Jagger, and Bette Midler all were interviewed for it. The closing night film is also a documentary called Vita and Serena, of course, about the tennis stars, and they actually will be here for the film. I believe I'm told they will be here when the film premieres next week for the closing night film. Lance Hamstrom, who I just mentioned, is getting a Career Achievement Award at the film festival. That's happening tonight at 7:00. There's also a lot of great seminars going on here. Yesterday was a great seminar about movie critics called Analyze This, A Critic's Power in Today's Film Culture. So we had a great discussion. There's another seminar going on today about You're Invited, Now What?, which is about something to teach filmmakers like what film festival is right for you. There's another seminar next week called about filming in Florida and beyond, which is specifically what it's like to film in Florida and teach you certain things like what the tax incentives are down here and so on. So and they throw some nice parties around here too, and they have well over 100 films from over 41 countries this year.
Wow, is this the first time you've been down there?
This is my fourth year covering the Miami International Film Festival. My first year was in 2010, so 10, 11, 12, and 13. It's my fourth year, It's a great film festival. I mean, I live in Palm Beach County, so it's a bit of a drive, but it's worth driving down to.
And you've done a lot of film festivals. You've gone to the Fort Lauderdale, and you've done.
I've done Fort Lauderdale since 2009. The Fort Lauderdale National Film Festival, the Palm Beach National Film Festival. I've covered the American Black Film Festival, which happens down here in Miami.
You reached the Women's Festival too, didn't you?
I'm sorry?
Didn't you go to the Women's Festival too in Palm Beach?
I believe so, yes, I did. I also go to, I also covered, you know, I said Suede Fest. There's just been, there's a lot of film festivals, and I said, you know, the Delray Beach / Downtown Boca Film Festival. So, yeah, I get around the film festival circuit.
Who do you think was your favorite interview of all of them?
I think one of my favorite interviews was John Carpenter, which is one of the masters of horror. He, of course, he directed the original Halloween. Almost all his horror movies have been almost redone by this point. My first question to him was, how do you create tension? And it just went from there. He was a really great guy to interview. Being a filmmaker myself at the same time, I almost learned. I learned so much just talking to him in one interview.
Yeah, was that at Spooky Empire?
That's at Spooky Empire's Ultimate Horror Weekend a few years ago. That's not a film festival per se. A film festival, the Freak Show Film Festival, happens up there. But Spooky Empire is both their Mayhem show and their Ultimate Horror Weekend show. I've been going at for a few years now, and that's where I first started doing my first interviews. My first interview I ever did was with Chris Tarandon at Spooky Empire. I spoke to him. I spoke to Herschel Gordon Lewis. I've done an interview with Kane Hodder, the stuntman. I've interviewed Robert Englund up there. I've interviewed Bruce Campbell up there. That horror convention really gets some great people, and I've been blessed to get some great interviews from those conventions.
Now, is that where you interviewed the people from Walking Dead?
Yes, and I actually interviewed a lot of the cast members from Walking Dead up there. Irony Singleton, who played T-Dog, Chandler Riggs, who's still on the show right now. Addie Miller, who plays the little zombie girl. I've got Steve Yen, who's still on the show. The characters have thankfully not been killed off yet. But yes, I got some great, old video interviews for those guys.
Did you get some insight into the show?
When I interviewed Chandler Riggs, it was before season 2 began, and I don't know if he did it realized what he did. He actually gave away a major spoiler about his character getting shot. I don't think he realized what he did. I could have maybe really spilled the beans on the show. So I decided to wait to put the interview after the show premiere. Like I did it 1 week after, just so I would. Protect me a little bit there. He's only a little kid, so he probably doesn't know these things.
Yeah. He hasn't been in the business long enough.
Right.
Well, also at Spooky Empire, you did a class about how to be a haunted house actor, and you've been doing that for years. Tell us a little bit about that.
My very first haunted house I worked in was called Glencoe's Haunted Courthouse, and that was in 1994. It was in the same courthouse where Alfred Hitchcock filmed North by Northwest. I saw a sign out there, they were looking for scare actors, so I went in and they hired me, and it's just something that stuck with. I've been doing it every year since. This year will be the 20th, provided I do do it, but I do plan to. 2013 will be my 20th year in a row working as a scare actor.
So,
even though there's no
why do you keep coming back?
I love scaring. You know what? I thought I'd retire years ago, but come around August, September, I start feeling evil, and I just get such a great thrill of scaring people. And obviously, I picked up a lot of techniques. So I really know what I'm doing. So 1 year, since Spooky Empire has always had these different kind of seminars going on, I presented an idea to do a class on how to be a haunted house actor, and they thought it was a great idea. I actually got someone else to work with me who's been a haunted house actress herself, and we put on a real successful class. I thought maybe only my friends would show up for the class, but you know, when I went to go show up to do the class, there was a lot of 50 people waiting out the door to come in.
Wow. So what kind of tips did you give?
I told people how to, you know, I mean, first I did some exercises that they might come across when they audition. Like sometimes you be in the center of a circle, you have a lot of people walking, like a circle of people walking around you, and your job is to scare one of the people in the circle, you know, who's walking around you in the circle. I taught things how to, a lot of times when you go to a haunted house, when you work in a haunted house, you'll see, and this usually is a bunch of teenage girls, they form a train, like, you know, one's sitting in front, and each one has their head buried in the back of the friend in front of them, and you'll see like a train of that, of like all these girls just one after the other, you know, their heads completely covered up, their faces are buried in their friend's back, they don't want to see anything. So I always thought, well, you know, they can't see you, so they're just too scared to see anything, but what these girls don't realize, their ears are exposed. So one technique I do is, you know, you sort of speak it real quietly, and what I do a snort that scares people. So I go right up to a girl's ear, like I'm just like inches away, and go, and it freaks them out.
Yeah. Now, so you really love the horror genre as well, and you've actually been involved in Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and I don't know which version of it was. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about that.
I'll go back further. When I was in high school, I wrote a version of, and this is the mid-1980s, I wrote a version of A Nightmare on the Street Part 3, because I read something in a magazine and couldn't read it online. We really didn't have the internet yet, that they were looking for scripts. So I had an idea for a script. I didn't know the right format. I ended up writing it in the wrong format. I wrote a script for Nightmare on Elm Street 3. My mom wrote this amazing cover letter for me, because, like I said, I was 15 years old. And we sent it into New Line, and we didn't hear from them for 2 months. But then they actually, 2 months later, we got a letter back from them saying they really enjoyed the script. It got passed all the way up to, like, the vice president of the company. They didn't buy it, but they said they really liked it, and they said, I can keep sending them my scripts. And they say, hey, when you get to college, let us know, you know, see if we can get you a summer internship job or something. So between when I got to college, my freshman year, I say I'm in college now. So in between my freshman and sophomore year, they got me a production assistant job out in California on Leatherface, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre Part 3. So I got I was a PA, production assistant on that, and it was an amazing experience, especially since I was only 18 years old.
Well, maybe you can tell us, like, a story from that experience, something that you remember that was cool.
You know, one person I'm still set to interview here at the film festival is Viggo Mortensen. Now, most people remember him as an Aragorn from the Lord of the Rings movies. He was actually in that movie himself. And one of my jobs in the movie was, like, the first four days of the movie were day shoots at this, like, gas station that they built themselves. And then the rest are all night shoots. It's a horror movie, so most of it takes place at night. And one of my jobs is to drive the cast from the production office to the gas station location, like an hour drive or something. And I used to drive Viggo. One thing, when I drove Viggo, I used to listen to George Collin tapes and maybe stop and get a sandwich. I remember one thing when we were filming in the valley. The crew would always be, like, you would see the crew catching and skinning rattlesnakes. You'd see these, like, you know, wooden boards with rattlesnake skin attached to it. And someone in the crew knew how to cook snakes, so they cooked. Some people actually cooked up the rattlesnakes. I was not daring enough to try it myself.
Yeah. That's interesting. Okay. Now, you mentioned that you were in college for film. Tell us a little bit about that and how you got your start in film. I know you made some really interesting film projects, including the feature that you did that I saw. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that process and the old school way of cutting the video. I know you had to do that too.
Yes. I mean, when I went to college, I went to Ithaca College. That's my school. I was a film major. I've always been, when I was really little, I thought I wanted to be an actor, but I was always writing stories as a little kid, and I said, and as I grew, I started writing more things, like I said, scripts. And when I first wrote my script, I always thought I wrote a script with myself in mind to star in it. But I really lost interest in acting and got more into, you know, I'd rather just dictate how someone makes my movie, so I just wanted to become a director instead. And so that's how I really became one, got into wanting to become a filmmaker. And years ago, we said, back then, it was everything was on film. We didn't have digital, we didn't have video. Everything was on film. So we shot everything like a 16-millimeter film. Back then, you usually edit things with on a flatbed. First of all, when you know, everyone knows like a clapstick from movies, you know, when they say, you know, scene three, take two, clap. Clapsticks are usually, the reason why people have clapsticks back, you shoot on film is to sync your sound, because your film track and your soundtrack are in two separate pieces of, are separated. It's not like
right.
a digital where everything's recorded in one thing. So basically, the reason why you have the clapstick is because what you got to do is once you get your film back, you take your film with your soundtrack, and you have to sort of, the first thing you do is sync it up, and when you see the film, when you see the clapsticks going down, at that exact moment, you make an X mark on it, so you know where that is. Then you listen to your soundtrack, and you wait to hear the very beginning of the claps come together, and that way you know your sound is completely synced up. So you got to do that for your whole, before you can start editing, you have to sync up your entire soundtrack with your film track. So kids today who edit on Final Cut. Their Apple machine, yes, you know, they don't know how easy they have it, but back in the old days, you had to shoot everything on film, from my senior film, I actually sparked three rule changes in Ithaca College after I made my senior film. My senior film was 35 minutes long. It was called Manic Monday 2, Mission Mayhem. My high school had a TV department, and I made something called Manic Monday, you know, which was just a day in the life of high school students. And the way and when it came time to make my senior film in college, there's always a senior film festival at the end of the year. All the senior films are shown. And then when I was a junior, I went to the senior film festival. And I said, okay, I'm either going to make a horror movie or a comedy for my senior film. As you said, I'm liking horror, of course. But when I went to the senior film festival my junior year, there were some great dramas. They're all dramas, but they were very depressing. I mean, you just wanted to kill yourself when you walked out of it, because everything was like one depressing topic over the other. I said, okay, I'm making a comedy. And when I was trying to think of an idea of what to do, I thought, you know, maybe I can take this character whose name was Judd in Manic Monday, and I'll bring him to college. And I gave him a little more of a storyline this time, because I said he gets framed for drug charge, and he has one day to clear his name. That one day is a Monday. And it was a 35-minute film, which was incredibly long for that time, you know, for a college student film. They actually sparked some rule changes. After that, they said you can't take, you know, college student films couldn't be longer than 15 minutes unless you got special permission from your professor. You always had to check out your film equipment. I actually did not start filming until November, which, you know, when school started August. Some people think I wouldn't even finish my movie on time. The reason why I waited so long is I spent that first number of months in pre-production planning everything out. Now, I can't emphasize more how important pre-production is for any movie. So once I had everything planned out, that's when I started shooting. But then I took equipment out every single weekend, like 8 weeks, 10 weeks in a row. And they said, you know, from now on, you can, you know, another new rule they say that you can't take out equipment for more than like X amount of weeks in a row. And also, I shot in where those flatbeds are, in the editing room. They didn't like that, so they wouldn't let people shoot there anymore. So. Anyway, from Ithaca, hearing this, you know, when you think about those, you know, why are those rules in place, I'm the reason why.
And you've done some other projects since then. I know you did a take on I Am Legend, right? And you've done some other little spoofs and different things, right?
I've made some in the past years. A number of years ago, the MTV Movie Awards actually had put out some spoof contest. They said, hey, instead of just the regular awards, now you, the people out there can be a part of the awards too. And they put on best spoof contests, and they give you a list of movies to make that you can spoof. In 2007, the first one they did it. They one of the ones they had listed was Snakes on a Plane. Now that one wasn't I didn't directly spoof. I actually made sort of an original spoof because I called it Snakes on a Plane, Nobody in the Theater, because after all this hype, Snakes on a Plane really did very poor business.
Right.
But I just had this like the comedy on that is that we had you know, basically like, you know, opening night of the movie and there's barely anyone in the theater. Although a lot of the people in the theater were based on characters from the movie, but you get to sort of know the movie to get it. And actually that was pretty popular. The following year they had the concept again, and one of the things on that was I Am Legend, the little Smith movie based on the comic book. Another movie they actually listed, they always had Harry Potter listed, they had Transformers, they had No Country for Old Men. So I incorporated all those movies into one spoof. The premise was, if you see I Am Legend, you know, Luke is like the only person like not affected by this deadly disease, and he's always looking for a cure. So I had this guy, you know, I had him like, you know, get this, you know, he catches a vampire to try to cure him. And every time he tries a new formula, he turns to a different character from a different movie. Like one time he turns to the guy, he turns to Anton from No Country for Old Men. Then one time he turns into the character, the vampire turns into Harry Potter. Another time he got a little doll of Optimus Prime from Transformers. And finally, in the end, he turns into Edna from Hairspray, which I ended up having to play myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you had an entry at Swedefest, too. One of those, was that Swedefest?
Swedefest, which was like which is also sort of like a spoof comedy film festival. I entered I Am Legend for that. I Am a Legend. Mine was called I Am a Legend, and they really liked it. They actually made my movie I Am a Legend the opening night film of the other festival. I didn't win the festival. I mean, there was only one winner. I mean, they gave out spoof prizes. I Am Legend won best misuse of gym equipment.
Strange problem prizes.
Yes, this woman named Belle who put it on really liked the film and said, so it was an honor to actually, this is like the first one in Palm Beach for Swedefest, so it was an honor to actually be able to have the opening night film for that festival.
Mm-hmm. And you're working on helping on another project, which was called Namaste, and I don't know if you can talk about that project or not right now.
I can't talk too much about Namaste. Namaste is we've actually changed the name from Namaste to Hear My Heart.
Right.
Namaste is a script I was a story editor on. We've been raising funds for we raised funds for it on Kickstarter, and we actually were bucking up to make our goal. And basically we have that money sort of sitting in extra right now. We are still seeking to get final full financing to the film, and you know, there's a lot of prospects for that right now. Hasn't come through yet. I can't go too much detail other than that. But we have looked at, you know, certain people from cast. We look at certain directors out there. Some of them are names which we can't share until they've been committed. But it's a full length feature. It's a story about a musician who loses his hearing, but still manage, you know, and through this bond he finds, he makes with an abused deaf dog, he finds his way to make it back in the music world.
And that's Casey Kelly's film.
Correct, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're working on that, and I know you've been working on some other scripts that you're writing. Tell me about that.
I've worked on, I have a couple of horror scripts out there. One is a low-budget feature called She, which is sort of like one of those. It's a throwback to the slasher flick. They were remaking so many of my classic. They remade, you know, Texas Chainsaw Massacre. They remade Halloween. They remade Friday the 13th. They remade Nightmare on Elm Street. All these classic horror movies they remade. And I'm thinking, you know, and they did good business, but basically there's like there hadn't been a new killer, you know, a kind of killer in a slasher film before. So I went out and said, you know what, let me try to create a new killer. I think I came up with a great character in that kid. It's only, and the reason why the movie's called She is you don't learn this character's name until the end of the movie. And I put some great inventive kills in the movie, and there were some real horror fans will be really, you know, I got I killed a grappling hook. I have an axe kill. I don't think it's ever been used. I used an axe in this movie the way I don't think one's ever been used before. I don't think any horror fans will be disappointed if I get this made. I also have a mega budget horror film, which just because I'm a little paranoid of someone trying to take the idea, I don't even want to give the title away.
Okay.
But this would be like almost like a $50 million budgeted movie if I can get, you know, that one I would have to sell to the studio. But I'm working on the third draft to it now. Once I have it completed, I think that might be the first thing I actually finally end up selling, because it really has a lot of potential.
You are doing so much writing, because you're not only writing the scripts, but you have to do your columns constantly for the Examiner. How do you keep yourself driven to keep writing and writing and writing?
I'll tell you, Rachel, it's not easy. I usually write just on movie reviews alone a year. I usually average over 100 movie reviews alone. Now, like I said, on top of that, you know, I write my interview articles. I write my you know, film festival articles. Sometimes I write other news articles. And I have a second column. I'm also the National Movie Trailers Examiner. So I write whenever a new movie trailer comes out, I write an article on that too. So I have two columns to write for. As far as keeping myself motivated, I just love writing. I mean, and it's always a little bit of a challenge, because I can take hours upon, I know, 4 or 5 hours to write one movie review. The reason why it takes so long is you have to be somewhat elegant. You want to sound, you can't just say, oh, this movie was great, and that's it. And this movie sucked, that's it. You really have to, be able to, put it out there, what worked for this movie, without giving away spoilers, and just to be elegant and to really communicate, if I can make someone read my review and either warn them off to a review I wrote, say, oh, I was going to go see this movie. After seeing this review, I don't think I should see it. Or if someone said, I don't know about this movie, and then they read my review and I put a good positive word out there, if I can influence them to go see it, then I've done my job, and having that kind of knowledge makes me feel good.
And you've been known for being brutally honest, to say the least.
Yeah, I can be. I can be brutally honest. You can actually call me cruel sometimes, and because when it comes to movies, and this works both ways. When I see a great movie, I will give complete props to a movie, and praise it up and down. But if you give me a bad movie, and most of them, a lot of them, especially come from the independent, film festivals are great. But you still get a lot of bad movies out there. One time at Delray Beach Film Festival, there was a movie called White Men Can't Dance. I thought it should have been called White Men Can't Act, because the person who made the film, the person who made the film, he wrote it, produced it, edited it, directed it, and acted in it. And his acting was awful. And so I just sort of, I actually had to confront him after he read my review, he kept trying to prove that I actually said to him, I think maybe the film could have been served better if you just directed and not acted in it. And he kept coming back at me saying, trying to find a way to prove I'm wrong. And finally one time he said, you don't know what it's like to be a filmmaker. You never went to film school. You don't know what it's like to make a film movie. And I'm like, actually, I did go to film school. I am a filmmaker. I know everything it takes to go make a movie. And he said, oh, and left me alone. Last year, the Palm Beach Film Festival, there was a documentary called 3 Days of Hamlet. I forgot the director's name, but he played the grandson in Pretty Woman. That movie documentaries are not usually interesting to me. Some of them are, some of them aren't, but ones that aren't really can be boring sometimes. This one's about Shakespeare, and I have nothing to do with Shakespeare, but it's about trying to put the play Hamlet on in 3 days. And not only was it just not interesting in any way, shape, or form, even technically, it was flawed. Like, when the guy who made the film, he was playing Hamlet himself, again, directing, you know, he's directing it and everything. He was in a room that echoed a lot, and he figured you got to, you know, you got to pick that stuff up. And one thing I wrote in my review was, you know, if I ever had government secrets, you don't have to torture me. Just threaten of having making me see this movie again, and I'll start talking. I'll spill the beans and everything. I heard that the director did read my review, was quite upset that I was, you know, why do you have to say all those things? I think he was almost on the verge of tears. But, you know, sometimes I've had directors who have read my negative reviews and said came up to me saying, you know what, you're right. I changed my movie after I saw what you wrote. So I don't, you know, in this kind of business, you can't sugarcoat. And you have to have a voice when you're a movie critic. And that voice has to cut throat sometimes, so be it.
Yeah, it comes down to it. That's your opinion, and they can take it with a grain of salt. And, you know, this business is a tough business, so, you know, they're going to get those people that don't like their movie. And
right.
There's other people that love it. So I actually interviewed the guy you're talking about for 3 days of Hamlet. And, you know, I'm a Shakespeare lover, I just loved it from that aspect. But, you know, I see what you're saying also. So, you know, there's different things. There's always a well-rounded approach to looking at something. But you have a tendency to find those faults and make sure people know about them. So,
if
it makes somebody, like you said, if it makes them improve their film, that's great. Otherwise, they can just, you know, not even read the review and don't look at it, you know.
Right.
What did you think about the Oscars, by the way?
I had a great time. I love the Oscars this year. I know, I understand some people get offended, but you have to know, with Seth MacFarlane, who puts on Family Guy in the movie Ted earlier this year, easy to probably, you know, cause some controversy. You have to, you know, the Academy, I'm sure, had to be thrilled. I mean, I thought, I have those female friends also who said, a lot of people were upset at the boob song. Of course, he actually framed it that basically the boob song really didn't happen. It was like sort of happened in an altered reality, but people still got upset by it. I thought it was great satire. I thought Seth MacFarlane was entertaining. I laughed throughout it. I thought he did a great job. I had no problem with what he said. Now, I'm not a woman, so I guess I can lack some sensitivity there. As for the awards themselves, the only ones I really disagreed with, I thought Jessica Chastain should have gotten Best Actress over Jennifer Lawrence. I do realize Zero Dark Thirty had a lot of backlash. I guess that's what happened. I thought Brave was a terrible movie last year. The fact that that got one Best Animated Feature, I thought was a travesty. I guess people are just used to voting for Pixar films, whether they see it or not.
Mm-hmm.
But
I
had a good time. I thought the show moved well. It was long, but still, I thought I had a good time. And I thought James Bond tribute could have been better. It was just sort of, I thought maybe they'd bring all the James Bonds out, but maybe it was hard getting someone like Sean Connery to show up. If you can't get Sean Connery, then why bother bringing everybody else along? But
right.
I think it was one of the best shows they've had in a long time.
Yeah, I liked it too, actually. Yeah. Well, so you're there at the film festival, and you've got some other things to do today, some other people to interview, right?
Hopefully I'll still get the Vigo one.
Okay. Well, we're running out of time, but
okay.
Why don't you give out your Examiner website for us?
You can read my reviews at, this is the quick address, leboonfilms.com, L-E-B-O, Lebo, O-N-F-I-L-M-S. F-I-L-M-S. LeboOnFilms.com is where you can get, you know, LeboOnFilms.com. I don't have a short address for my trailer column. If you put my full name, Stephen Lebo's Trailers, on Google, you'll find my trailer column. And besides putting trailers on there, I do put other things. That's where you'll find my Walking Dead interviews. I put Walking Dead episodes. Actually, even though it's a TV show, I did put the season 3 trailer to the Game of Thrones on that site. So, you know, mm-hmm. So a lot of good, you know, besides new trailers, I do some other videos, too, on that site for the trailer. So if you put Stephen Lebo's Trailers in a Google search, you can get there. And www.leboonfilms.com will get you to my column.
Okay. All right, well, I'm going to let you go, but thanks for being on the show today.
No, thank you, Rachel. It's been fun.
Okay. Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay, well, that was Stephen Leibowitz, and like you said, you can go back and listen to his films at leibowonfilms.com. And I mentioned that he mentioned a film that he didn't like that he talked about, and I mentioned that I did interview that filmmaker, and you can go back and listen to the interview on 3 Days of Hamlet. Again, being a Shakespeare lover, I enjoy anything Shakespeare, and I do understand what he was going for with the project. And anything, it's an independent film, you know, it has struggles, it has problems. You know, a project I talked about a couple weeks ago had sound issues, had lighting issues, had actors issues. I mean, there's always something on these independent projects. And there's film critics out there like Stephen who will pick those things apart. And like I said, if you are a filmmaker, you have to be prepared for that. Of course, I know being an actor and on this business, I know how hard it is. So I also, I'm kind of on the other end of the spectrum. When I write something, I'm kind of the positive person. But there are those negative people out there that are going to pick things apart. And it is constructive criticism. Sometimes it may be a little bit more brutal than it should be, but again, that's his opinion. So if you look at an interview that he did or something that he did and you think, wow, that was really brutal, that was unnecessary, just remember that's his opinion. So everybody has a right to their opinion, and I'll leave it at that. But we went over a lot of stuff today. As you can see, Stephen is well-rounded in the film industry. He's done a little bit of everything. And I wanted to bring him on board to talk to us because he's at the Miami International Film Festival. And if you want to head down there, that film festival is still going on. And just check out miamifilmfestival.com to find out who else is going to be there and what other movies and things are going to be showing there, okay? Also, I want to announce that I am involved with putting together a fight class for actors here in South Florida. If you are in the South Florida area and you want to go to a free fight class on March 22nd, please email me. My email address is ravenprods, R-A-V-E-N-P-R-O-D-S, at yahoo.com. And I will sign you up for that, and I'll send you all the information. It is a free class. It's 45 minutes long, and it's with Master Sang, who is known throughout Florida. He's been in business since 1990. He has different martial arts studios in Miami and now up in Coconut Creek, and he's providing this free class. He trains people like Brett Ratner, director Brett Ratner. He's trained Christian Slater, and I'm actually getting some training with him. And he's also been in movies like Rush Hour 2 and 3, and he's working on a new movie with Brett Ratner. I'm actually bringing him on the show next week, so I'll be interviewing him about his stunt work, his martial arts work, et cetera, and we're going to talk about him being in those movies. So tune in next week. The show will be back at 1 o'clock instead of 1:30. Things got changed a little bit today, but I'll be back Sunday at 1 o'clock next Sunday. All right, guys, thank you again for listening in, and I will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.